May the words of my mouth and the meditations of all our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. When I began gathering my thoughts for this morning service, I realised I needed to begin rather in the manner of a TV serial. You know the sort of thing, a quick resume of what has already happened so you can pick up today's episode and follow the storyline. So here goes. It's actually very brief. In last week's gospel reading, a huge crowd had gathered to hear Jesus, and later in the day, with the help of 5 loaves and 2 fishes, all were fed, and there was even food left over. There was a little bit more to the reading where the disciples were on Lake Galilee and Jesus walked on the water to them, but that's not really relevant to what I'm talking about this morning. This miracle is the only one which appears in all 4 Gospels, which tells us perhaps how important it was in the earliest days of the Christian church. Now, it might be because it carries echoes of a communion service. We've already mentioned this morning about our link between bread and communion. But there's also something else very important going on. This miracle has a part to play in telling those who witnessed it who Jesus was and why he was doing what he did. And this morning's reading continued the story, and there's a bit more to come next week. And it takes us into the next phase of Jesus' teaching. But overnight, as I've mentioned, Jesus and the disciples had crossed the Sea of Galilee in a small boat, and they'd reached the town of Capernaum. And I think really that the idea was to get away, having had a day of preaching and teaching and healing. Jesus wanted to escape and have some quiet time with his disciples. But no joy, because the crowds were not willing, of course, to let him go. And so they followed him round. And this is why the reading begins with, you know, how did you get here? These were poor people on whom the miracle would have made a very, very big impression. And their one aim, of course, is to see whether there's more free food on offer. That is how they see it, as simply as that. It's clear that their only interest in Jesus was to take what he could give them in the material sense. And I don't think we should perhaps judge them too harshly. I wonder how we would have behaved if we had been in those circumstances. But it's obviously going to be very difficult to get them to accept that there's actually something going on behind this, that there is a much deeper and more valuable meaning. The other problem is, of course, that because Jesus has been doing what he's been doing, they see him as a potential political leader. This is someone who could come along, overthrow the Romans, get rid of heavy taxes, reduce the price of grain. Everybody would be better off. Now, some commentators think that the dialogue that we heard in our reading today actually took place in the synagogue in Capernaum. Certainly next week's does. Apparently, that sort of discussion was sometimes a part of Jewish worship. I'm glad you don't do it. Halfway through the sermon, up goes a hand. Excuse me. You wait until we're having the coffee afterwards, I know. But the idea was the rabbi is teaching, and people in the congregation would challenge him or ask him to explain. In this case, of course, the people are very relieved. They've tracked Jesus down. And the one thing they want is to persuade him to grant them more miraculous food. But of course, Jesus' aim is to encourage them to think beyond the bread they can physically eat and focus on the spiritual food which he represents. And that brings us to that most important sentence in the whole passage. I am the bread of life. Now, we've already thought a bit about bread, why we like it, what we do with it, why we enjoy it. And that, of course, is one of the reasons why Jesus uses it as a symbol. It was so readily understood, you would think, by most people. But there is also a lot of symbolism going on here. The phrase bread of God stood for the Torah, or the Jewish law. And it also represented wisdom. You can perhaps understand this, because if you have absorbed the law and the wisdom of the Jewish writers, it is like bread feeding you. There's quite a lot of references in the Old Testament on this. And then, of course, Jesus says, "I am," which to us sounds very simple, but of course it's much, much more than that. When Moses met God in the burning bush, he said, "Who shall I say that I have talked to? Who shall I tell my people that I have met?" And God says, "I am that I am. I am has sent you." So I am is the name for God. So Jesus is actually saying, he's not just saying, "I'm the bread of life." He's saying, "I'm God." He's also saying that what he offers is far superior to the Jewish law and wisdom. And that's why it's more satisfying. It's more satisfying than anything they can do in their belief and their worship. It answers the hunger that is in every human heart. So what was the way to get this wonderful bread? Well, Jesus tells the crowd they must believe in him because he's the one who God has sent. Now, again, that sounds deceptively simple, but as you probably already picked up, it's not. He's asking them to move on from everything they've thought is sacred and important to something else. And he's asking them to believe in him. Who is this Jesus? Can we believe in him? Can we believe what he's saying? No wonder they demand more miraculous proof. They want another miracle. Now, as they say in all the best TV dramas, to be continued next week, because I'm presuming, is it John next week? Yes. I'm presuming John might pick up where I've left off. Because there's more reaction next week. Oh, well, you might not. But if you want to know, just read the verses that follow on, because there's another reaction to what Jesus has been saying. But obviously my job now is to reflect on Jesus' words, help us all to reflect on them and apply them to ourselves in our very different modern world. And I have to say that what came into my mind was one of my current favourite TV programmes, Eat Well for Less. If you don't know it, it's a programme which helps families to change from current bad eating habits to something more healthy and hopefully to save themselves some money along the way. The programme begins with the two presenters, Greg Wallace and Chris Bavin, spying on a family as they do their main weekly supermarket shop. And they note what has been bought, but perhaps most importantly, what has not been bought. Oh, they've walked straight past the vegetables. And of course, at the end, a huge amount of money has often been spent. And two things always emerge. One is that a big proportion of the shopping is junk food, convenience meals, sugary snacks, and that sort of thing. And the second is that because of that, it's very expensive. And another factor is that most of these families have little idea of how to cook a meal from scratch with fresh ingredients. And that is why they rely so heavily on convenience food. And they buy lots of jars of sauce. I'm sorry if you like to buy jars of sauce. I know they're very tempting, especially if you're on your own. But they are expensive. And Greg Wallace is always particularly scathing about ready-prepared veg. People buying bags of ready-peeled carrots or ready-grated cheese. "How long does it take to peel and chop a carrot?" he cries in despair. But a week of trying new things or cheaper versions of regular buys, as well as learning some cooking basics, can be the sort of experience akin to that of Paul on the road to Damascus. You'd be surprised. Suddenly a whole new world opens up. And it's so much more fulfilling than the old one. And one of the things they actually really enjoy is often doing things as a family. So they're actually spending time in the kitchen together. Whether they can keep that up and not argue later, I don't know. But and even taking it in turns, if you've got parents and children, taking it in turns to cook during the week. It's quite extraordinary how this seems to somehow open up a completely different life. So why do I think this is relevant to our readings today? Well, when Jesus says, "I am the bread of life, whoever comes to me will never be hungry, and whoever believes in me will never be thirsty," I think he too is offering us a choice between what we might call a quick fix convenience life and one which is much more satisfying to our hearts and souls. Let's think about it a little more. I'm sure we all do like a bar of chocolate or a packet of crisps or some other sweet snack, especially when we're in a hurry or we need a quick pick-me-up or even a treat to cheer us up, you know, comfort food. But we also know that this is only a quick fix. It fills us up for the time being, the famous sugar spike, but equally the sugar spike plummets down again. The hunger pangs return and, oh yes, we need another chocolate biscuit. How much better to eat a proper balanced meal which gives us slow and steady energy release like an apple. And I think we have to ask ourselves whether our faith works in the same way. If we're followers of Jesus, we have to be in it for the long haul, not just for the short-term buzz. We shouldn't be satisfied with a convenience faith, as it were, out of a packet or in a foil tray out of the freezer. Because real faith is having a relationship with Jesus which matures, grows, and changes, constantly developing as we journey through all the ups and downs we face. For as we all know, faith is not something you can buy ready packaged, with an appetizing picture on the front, needing the minimum of effort to prepare. No. Faith often takes us out of our comfort zone and into new territory, and it requires us to put our hand into the hand of Jesus, believing that he will see us through. Like preparing a meal from scratch, using ingredients we have chosen and bought, faith is about effort, hard work, and often perseverance. No ready prepped carrots here. But the end result will always be so much better and so much more sustaining than the quick fix, rather superficial alternative. And just as Jesus told the crowd in Capernaum, "I am the bread of life," so he is still saying those words to us today. He's offering us food to sustain our deepest needs. There are so many things which can drive and motivate human beings: the pursuit of wealth and or power, the gathering of material possessions, the desire for constant novelty and entertainment. But as we will all know, because no doubt at some point, I would think the latter, particularly about the novelty and entertainment, you realise that it wears off. You may enjoy it for a short time, but it isn't enough on its own. None of these can give us the permanent satisfaction that we get from faith in Jesus. I heard you say as you came in this morning how lovely it was to come to church this morning, how important it was to be here. I thought, how lovely to hear that before we've even had the service. I hope you're still going to feel it at the end. But I think one of our great values in the United Reformed Church is community. Last week, I was doing the feeding of the 5,000 at Trinity, and I was pointing out that food is very much at the centre of the URC as well. If you have an event in the URC, food will always come with it. But so will community, so will fellowship, so will feeling part of a family. And because I'm fortunate in preaching in Ipswich Road, Jessop Road, Princes Street and Trinity, I see you all as one big family. You're all related. And today I'm visiting the cousins here, as it were. Next week it's St Peter's, Jessop Road. I think it's something that we really, really ought to value. And we don't always recognise how wonderful it is. Hopefully, as we work at and grow our faith, the end result will be something like the hopes that Paul expressed for the Christians at Ephesus when he writes, "I beg you to lead a life worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, making every effort to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace." It's another big challenge, but not, I think, an unachievable one. We all know that we are what we eat in the physical sense. And whether we enjoy it or not, I'm sure we all try to eat our five a day and do other healthy things. But perhaps we also need to think about how far we have got in our spiritual eating. That word spiritual can be rather off-putting for some people. They don't want to be thought to be too religious. I have a cousin who says to me sometimes, "Of course, you're more religious than I am, Barbara." And I get a bit worried about this because I don't think that I am really. They enjoy worship, but they're worried about going any deeper into questions of faith. And I can only speak from my own personal experience. Since I began lay preaching, I've been on a great journey of exploration. I know a lot more about the Bible, and through that and thinking deeply about the services that I plan has brought me closer to Jesus and God, far closer than I could ever have thought possible. And it's been a journey very well worth taking. So the thought I'd like to leave you with this morning is this: don't go for ready meal faith. Take the step into real, sustaining, long-term faith. And as Jesus promised, you will never be hungry again. Amen.